Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
My name is Angelo Carasone, better known as Stop Back on Twitter, and primarily I spend my time trying to debunk right-wing lies that permeate our media, and there's, you know, one of the places that we do it is on Bob Carson's show.
Hi, this is David K. Johnston, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
This is Lamar Waldron, the author of Ultimate Sacrifice and Legacy of Secrecy, those two books, the latter of which will become a movie produced and starring Leonardo DiCaprio in 2013, and you are listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio.
This is Les Leopold, the author of How to Make $1 Million an Hour, and I just want to tell you that you'll get a rich and rewarding experience by listening to Carson's Corner.
Hi, this is Keith Bishop, author of Slop, the Wild Boar Nation, and you're listening to Carson's Corner, talk radio seeking solutions for today's and tomorrow's challenges.
This is Greg Palast, reporter for BBC Television and Democracy Now, and author of the new book, Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores, and you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio, radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
Hi, this is Frank Schaefer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. You're listening to Carson's Corner, a show I enjoy. I hope you enjoy it, too. I encourage you to listen.
Welcome to a freezing edition of Carson's Corner here on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Bob Carson. Oh, my God, is it freezing out there? Now, mind you, my roommate and I do not have any heat. That is absolutely correct, folks. That is an indictment on capitalism. We need to get that term in our vocabulary, indictment on capitalism or indictment of capitalism. There's no question about that because on December 11th, my roommate and I, who have kerosene-powered heat, we have a tank outside of our house, got $200 worth on December 11th of kerosene heat. You know how long that lasted us, folks? That lasted us until December 26th. Actually, no, December 24th, Christmas Eve. Can you believe that? By Christmas Eve, we were without heat, and we've been without heat ever since. And you know something? That's the way I want it to be, because I don't want to continue to fork money over to a for-profit company for them to provide heat for my house, which I need to live. It's unbelievable. It's so damn expensive. But again, this is what we see in our capitalist system, where the sequence of money is more important than the life sequence. In other words, as Milton Friedman said on some college campus one time, it's more important that the energy company, the heat company or whatever, get to turn off someone's heat because they can't make a profit than it is for someone to receive that heat so that they can live. And that's what we have here, where we have a very mean-spirited economic system that really more questionably now is becoming under examination here. And we're starting to see some signs here. I mean, you know, look, you got Bill de Blasio in New York City. And I've said before, folks, anyone's guess as to whether or not Bill de Blasio is going to be a real game changer, if he's really going to change the fundamentals of the economy. If you look at his pick for police chief, If you look at some of his advisors, okay, you can gather that it may be just the same old song and dance over there in New York City. Then you've got that councilman, I believe in Seattle, that socialist councilman that won. You've got a workers' rights movement. You've got fast food workers congregating, arguing for an increase in their wages. You've got all these signs that we may finally be experiencing or have some sort of a change in the economic system in America that has really battered all of us for the last 30-plus years in particular. So we'll see what happens. By the way, speaking of Bill de Blasio, you know, I got to tell you this, and this is something that you're not going to hear anywhere else, but is the absolute truth. And I speak from anecdotal experience on this. I'm not going to tell you really how I heard this, but you have to take my word for it. And if you're listening to the show, you'll probably understand that the elites in our society, the very wealthy, have a problem with Bill de Blasio, not necessarily because he describes himself as a progressive. Bill de Blasio has really drawn a visceral reaction from everybody out there. They hate him because, you know, he's talking about income inequality when, of course, we're supposed to be talking about income inequality in quiet rooms, as Mitt Romney has said. They hate him, obviously, because of, you know, what he says he wants to do to the tax code and how, you know, he wants to tax high-income earners to provide child care to low-income. I mean, of course, in the game and how the elites frame it, that is redistribution of wealth and income. Redistribution of wealth and income only works one way in America, and, of course, that's up. It never can be told it's actually the other way around. But they hate Bill de Blasio because – oh, great, we got Justin Ray Harvey on the line. We're going to get to him in just a minute. But they hate Bill de Blasio because he has an African-American wife and because he has African-American children. They do, folks. The elites in New York City and around the country are uncomfortable in seeing a biracial marriage. It is the absolute truth. And it just shows you how race relations in America, and, you know, these people are not going to tell a pollster that. They're probably not going to be too public with that sentiment. Although, you know, among their circles, among inner circles, they are happy, or I'm sorry, they are uncomfortable with the fact that Bill de Blasio married a black man, because we know how the elites see African Americans in our society. We do. Without further ado, let's go to Justin Ray Harvey. He joins us. J-Ray, can you hear me?
Hey, Bob, I thought I would surprise your audience and you and just drop in, my friend.
Yeah, it's good to hear you. This is 2014 now. It's a new journey here for Carson's Corner, and we haven't spoken to you in a while on the air.
Yeah, my health has been really bad here lately, and hopefully I'll be all fixed up within the next few weeks or next month. It's been a long road, Bob, so.
Yeah, I know that you've had problems with the doctors and just, you know, incompetence all around, and certainly, mm-hmm. you know, we'll keep everybody apprised of your situation. By the way, can you hear me okay? Is there any distortion on my end, Justin?
It sounds good to me, Bob, on my end, actually.
Okay, so. Good, because as I mentioned earlier, it's about 18 degrees outside, and we have no heat in my living quarters here, if you want to call it that. And so I have to have an electric fan on, because that's the only way I could do the show. If I turn the electric fan off, then it's going to get freezing in this room, and I'll actually be able to see my breath. So I'm hoping that the audience out there, the distortion is at a minimal, because I don't want to distract everybody out there.
Yeah, absolutely, Bob. Now, I can't speak for Blog Talk Radio, but because, you know, sometimes I can hear you, and yet it won't record sometimes, so it's hard to tell. So.
Well, I know that we're definitely broadcasting live over the air right mm-hmm. now. Everything's fine, so we'll just continue with the show. Are you able to stick around for the hour?
Sure, Bob, because later on I have a couple announcements and, you know, some updates, so sure, I'll stick around.
Oh, that's great news. That is. So, yeah, all right, great. We'll continue the show. You know, I was talking about race relations in America. We're talking about how the elites in America are uncomfortable still to this day with African Americans, and there's plenty of evidence out there to suggest that racism still exists in America. We could look at things like job applications, who's more likely to get a call back while submitting a job application. We could look at things like, you know, the criminal justice system and the disparities between African Americans and white individuals when it comes to sentencing, when it comes to, you know, the stop and frisk program in New York City, how minorities were disproportionately targeted and underrepresented in terms of arrests. We can look at also, and we've been talking about this for a long time on the show, the treatment that President Obama has endured over the past 5 years. Now, we don't support President Obama. I just want to get that message out there. We are beyond the two-party system in America because both parties are factions of the business party. Both parties essentially agree on the interests that matter to America's elites. They agree on privatization. Okay, President Obama has privatized our school systems. He's actually gutted more regulations than George W. Bush. They agree on low taxes, essentially on the very wealthy. The idea of raising taxes on the wealthy to where they were under Ronald Reagan, which was 70%, is not even politically viable. It's not even discussed in our corporate media and within our corporate-driven system, because the business elites in America have decided that they already pay too much taxes, even though they get all of the income growth, and even though they essentially tell the government when they're going to pay taxes, what they're going to pay in taxes, and how much they're going to pay in taxes. And for anybody that is more interested on that point, you can read the work of David K. Johnston, who was a guest on this show. They agree on huge military budgets. You know what's disgusting is that they haven't extended unemployment benefits for 1.3 million Americans, and my roommate is one of them, okay? This is a story that personally affects me, and anybody out there understands that I don't like to give anecdotal arguments because this is one of the bases for Republican arguments about welfare, about the government, about this and that. They always look down on people using anecdotes to, you know, try to basically paint every situation as being the individual's fault. Oh, somebody's in poverty, it's their fault. These welfare recipients, they're, you know, sucking down cigarettes and drinking soda, and so it's their fault, and we can't spend our tax dollars helping people that are poor. But yet, we can't even extend unemployment benefits to people who are unemployed by no fault of their own, and yet our military spending is off limits. The very wealthy and the elites have decided that we cannot look elsewhere in the budget when it comes to waste in the defense industry, when it comes to waste in our United States tax code, which is ballooned up to 70,000 pages. We have to look to people that are on unemployment because, you know, essentially it makes for good politics to demonize individuals that are on unemployment. And my roommate is one of them. And you know something? Let me tell you something, folks. My roommate does not have an extension on unemployment. He is trying to get a job, and right now he has absolutely no income. What do you think is going to happen to a person in America that has no income? Because if you don't have any income in America, you don't survive. If you are unable to rent yourself to an employer for survival, you cannot survive. So right now, my roommate, if he does not get an unemployment extension or any type of unemployment benefits, which he has paid into, again, this is not a welfare program. People pay unemployment tax. They pay payroll taxes, and a certain portion of the payroll tax is diverted for unemployment insurance. If he does not get it, he does not survive. And you know what that means? I do not survive because he pays half of the rent. You see how this affects us? You see, you know, individuals that had nothing to do with the collapse of 2008, individuals that are playing by the rules that are given to us, it affects us. And still, I still see these corporations paying nothing in taxes. I still see Wall Street, you know, gambling with our money and paying nothing in taxes, no transaction taxes, siphoning our commons. This is absolutely disgusting.
I see guys like you and me, Bob, eventually, years down the line, living underground and trying to scrounge up scraps while the rich has the ground and the earth. I can really see that, Bob.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, and this is how the elites think is there's a certain amount of entitlement that goes with being wealthy, and it's the way these people think. They believe that they are inherently better than you and I. They believe that they are the productive members of society. You know, it's not like Lyndon Johnson said, where it's America is a race and certain people start halfway down, certain people start three quarters of the way down, and you know, the vast majority of Americans start at the beginning. It's not like that. It's you know, sink or swim. It's this objective mindset that ultimately serves the interests of the elites, because you know, if you talk to someone like Mitt Romney or you talk to anyone that has a lot of money in America, they're not going to attribute that to them being born into the right family or them being born during a certain time in America or you know, any number of the factors that give them advantages in life, you know, the area that they were born into. I mean, there's a whole book about this called The Self-Made Myth that talks about all these different factors that go into, you know, why some people become wealthy and some people don't, and most of us don't. They're going to attribute that to their own individual success because it's easy for them to do so. They don't want to admit that they had the advantages in life. And what we've seen in America is that this country, opportunity is generational in America. And it's really unfortunate is that the family that you're born into determines where you're going to be economically as an adult. And anybody that tells you differently, anybody that tells you that this is still the land of the opportunity and anybody can make it in America is really not telling you the whole story.
Oh, absolutely, Bob. I couldn't agree more. And, you know, I see this Obamacare as nothing but trouble, you know, for people that may not even have Obamacare, you know, this health plan that he orchestrated. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll tell you about that, because it continues to be a hot topic, and we'll see whether or not that plays a big role in the 2014 elections. On a personal note, I don't have health care right now. I have charity care, and because a charity care is not an acceptable insurance, I'm going to get a fine this year when my taxes are paid back to me. It's going to be like a $100 fine. And then from there on, if I don't get health insurance through either my employer or through the exchanges, then I'll get the fine will increase to over $300. And I am eligible for a subsidy because I am a low-income American. I don't make a lot of money. And I went on the Affordable Care Act website, which, by the way, works now. They've straightened out the problems. You've had over a million people sign up in December. And what happened is that including my subsidy, the Affordable Care Act would be more for me to get insurance through the exchange than it would be to get employer-based insurance. It would be a lot more. And so, you know, basically next year I'm going to have to get employer-based insurance if I want to avoid the fine, and that's probably what I'll have to do. But you know what? The reason why the individual mandate was put in, and that's the most controversial provision of the Affordable Care Act. You know, people are horrified at the idea of lifetime caps on insurance policies. People are horrified at the idea of discrimination against people with pre-existing conditions. And if you think that doesn't happen, you're sorely mistaken, because that happens to tens of millions of Americans each year. If you have a mental disease, you qualify as a pre-existing condition. If you get sick, any number of circumstances, which is why we have over a million people each year filing for bankruptcy due to medical bills. And the whole reason why the individual mandate was put in place was so that the insurance companies can maintain profitability. And this, what this goes back to is what I said earlier, is where we here in the United States of America put the sequence of money over the sequence of life. And that's why, so what we say to the insurance companies is that we're going to inconvenience a lot of Americans by forcing them to get private for-profit health insurance, which Obama deemed was the problem in 2008, so that you can insure people that are sick, which is the morally just thing to do. You can not put lifetime caps on people's insurance policies. You cannot, spend, you know, $30 or $40 or a percent off of every dollar that somebody pays you for, you know, advertising and CEO compensation and whatnot, unless we mandate that everybody buys health insurance. And that is disgusting. And that's what's wrong. And you know what? Affordable Care Act is still going to be an inefficient system, because our current for-profit model is completely inefficient. You know, Peter Joseph told us that the market system is based on waste and inefficiency. And that's what our healthcare insurance is. It's a system that's based on waste and inefficiency.
Wow. And Bob, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know if you're going to do this in the second half of the show, but I was reading in tonight's description that you were going to discuss an issue about one of my favorite shows, Duck Dynasty, and I wanted to make sure and discuss that with you about the Duck Dynasty controversy that has conspired.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that goes to what we were talking about earlier with you know, race relations in America. And my argument has been this, is that, Americans have the right to say whatever they want to say. This man, Phil Robertson, expressed some opinions that the family calls his faith. This is what his faith, he compared homosexuals to bestiality. He said that African Americans were better, during the days of slavery, and everybody was happy, and that only welfare and entitlements, which he associates with black people, has made black people unhappy. And what happened was A&E suspended him indefinitely, and because of outrage from the public, because of right-wing groups that are sympathetic to his point of view, which I would argue is bigoted. I would argue minimizes slavery, and it would not be accepted if other groups were targeted. For example, if Phil Robertson said that Jews were happier prior to the Holocaust, you could bet that A&E would drop him immediately, because there's absolutely no tolerance for anti-Semitism or denying the horrors of the Holocaust. But with African Americans, it's okay for someone, like Phil Robertson or someone like, Don Imus or Dr. Lore or fill in the blank to make racist remarks, because America, I would argue, a majority of white Americans sympathize with the comments that Phil Robertson made, and they feel that America is under attack by African Americans in terms of, sensitivity, in terms of the government, quote, making too much of the problems facing African Americans. And so what this highlights to me is that there is a tolerance for intolerance in our corporate media. And you know something? Duck Dynasty is going to be even more wealthy now. The show is going to be it's going to get higher ratings. They're going to make more money now. Because I would submit to you that a majority of white Americans agree with the sentiments expressed by Phil Robertson.
Now, one thing I will say, Bob, is I'm not disputing anything you say at all. I do agree, but the thing is, I will say this, that A&E had no right to suspend him because, number one, he didn't say it on the show. He said it in a private interview.
Right.
So yeah, it wasn't like he was on air saying what he said, you know. So it wasn't on A&E, so I don't think that they had any right to suspend him.
Well, here's the thing, is that A&E now owns Phil Robertson. They own his opinions. So, and it's true, because, I mean, you know, if it works like that with any cable news star or any cable news personality or any journalist, if you have a journalist working for ABC, and we reject the corporate media, and I subscribe to Noam Chomsky's propaganda model, but if you have a journalist that makes a comment when giving an interview to, you know, GQ magazine or whatever, that expresses racial intolerance or expresses, you know, a bigoted point of view, then you could bet that, you know, public pressure is going to put pressure on that network to not basically own that hatred, not tolerate that mindset. And this goes to a lot of the right-wing individuals out there are saying this is a violation of his free speech. No, it's not, because A&E is a private company. A&E is a corporation. And if one of their employees said something that's going to hurt the brand of A&E, they have a right to discipline him. And you know, what has happened is that A&E now, you know, basically said he could come back to the show. Their restaurant Cracker Barrel is now you know, reversed their decision in selling Duck Dynasty merchandise and whatnot. And he continues. And what's going to happen is, you know, there's one cable news network that is the home of bigotry. It is the home of people that have a racial resentment against minorities. And excuse me. And of course, that is Fox News. You know, anytime somebody makes racial remarks, they can go to Fox News for cover, because the elites at Fox News and everybody at that right-wing fascist network, they are sympathetic to Phil Robertson's point of view. They do believe that minorities are a drag on society. They do believe that minorities suffer in a culture of poverty. You know, they believe that welfare is somehow killing us. Americans are lazy, and so they ultimately agree with the sentiments expressed by Phil Robertson, which is why eventually you're going to see this guy on Fox News doing a sympathetic interview with someone that sympathizes with him. Because mark my words, Justin, this is not the end of this controversy, because this guy, Phil Robertson, now, he's going to give other interviews. He has, you know, spoken at church and speaking about how 14- and 15-year-old girls should get married and so on and so forth. So this is only the beginning, and the only question is how long is A&E going to, you know, or how is A&E going to respond to each comment he makes going forward?
And the two things that I want to say real quickly, Bob, is one thing I do respect the family for, though, with this controversy, it seems like they haven't let their riches get to them, because they said if Phil wasn't on the show, there would be no more Duck Dynasty. So that, I'm glad that the family showed some values and not said, okay, we'll do it without Phil and make our money. So
well,
I will say that. So.
They stood by what he said. They basically endorsed what he said, although they called it coarse, but ultimately they endorsed, and A&E endorses it too. And what they've done is, and this is, you know, if you look at, and again, this is a very successful show, there's no question about it, the ratings are high, but what they have done here is they've said that, you know, African Americans do not matter when it comes to calculating, you know, the profits. Gay people do not matter. It doesn't matter the backlash that the network received because of comments such as this, because ultimately they are relying on white America, you know, to buy products, to watch the show, and so on and so forth. And the advertisers of the show have made that calculation as well, which underscores my point that there is a place for this in our media. And not only that, you know, Duck Dynasty, and these guys are very political. They're all very right-wing. Duck Dynasty, their audience and their mindset and their attitude really represents the Republican Party in the sense that the Republican Party relies on white individuals, a majority white vote, to keep their power. And so that's what we see in Duck Dynasty. You know, you look at the Tea Party, which I would argue is an organized white backlash against changing demographics in America. The Tea Party, they're essentially the handmaids of corporate America. They gravitate towards a show like Duck Dynasty because they agree with Phil Robertson's sentiments. They genuinely believe, and I said this on last week's show, they genuinely believe that we are still in a civil rights era, only the roles have been reversed, that white individuals are losing their liberty to black individuals. And this is a sentiment that's not just within lower class white communities, it's also with the white elites in America. And I know this from personal experience. You can look at things like voting patterns and things like propaganda that comes out of certain right-wing corporate funded institutions that really play this all up.
What will be interesting, Bob, is like when their contract is up with A&E, I wonder if they're going to go to another station because of all this, because I do know once A&E agreed to suspend him, there was a bunch of stations ready just to pick him up already without him being released. So.
Well, that's correct. That really is, and it wouldn't surprise me if that did take place. But it goes to, and anybody that criticizes him, anybody that suggests race relations in America has really not improved over the past 30 plus years, even though the corporate elites tell us that it's improved and tell us that we should only look for specific acts of racism. We shouldn't look at the, inherent racism built into our system. There's a place for this in our corporate media, and they will get picked up by another network.
Maybe even Fox, Bob.
Exactly. You never know. But it just goes to show you that there is still a divide in this country, and I don't think it's ever going to get better unless the demographics kind of even this country out. And even that line of thought is not necessarily substantiated, because you can look at a city like New York City, which has a very diverse population, and yet New York City up until recently was controlled by right-wing elitist mayors, but it underscores a real problem that we have in America, a real tolerance for intolerance. And as I was stating earlier, is that anybody that talks about this, anybody that suggests that there's racism in our system, anybody that rightly points out that much of the opposition towards President Obama has been rooted in racism, anybody that points out the fact that the Tea Party is essentially fundamentally racist, they're attacked immediately. They're called quote race baiters, a part of the racial grievance industry, which is a talking point that has come out to basically discourage debate. And so I'm sort of on the other aisle. I'm sort of on the other side here, where I think that this highlights a lot of problems that we have in America and the support that somebody gets. The same thing with Chick-fil-A. You remember the Chick-fil-A controversy? Well, what happened after that is, people went to Chick-fil-A. They supported Chick-fil-A. It's because, You know, they expressed an opinion that some may be consider bigoted, and yet there are people out there that feel that, you know, bigoted comments should be on corporate airwaves, and people have the right to be racist, and people have the right to be bigoted. But you know what? As true as that is, and it is true, as I said at the top of the show, people have a right to be bigoted and racist, but we also have a right to have speech that counters that, and that's the marketplace of ideas. And what we see is that, you know, the speech that counters Phil Robertson's speech is often often suppressed by the very wealthy and elites out there, and I think that's unfortunate too. It really is. So nobody's saying that he can't say what he said. It's just that people are going to respond, and you do not have a constitutional right to be a reality TV star.
Well, on that note, Bob, I also say that we also, as a people, have the power to be better than our past generations, and forget all this crap with, you know, racism and all this other stuff. I mean, because I don't believe it's going to get any better. I think it's only going to get worse, honestly. But we as a people have the power to change that, but only we can do that.
Well, you know what? It's only going to get worse, and the reason why it's going to get worse, and one of the reasons why, is because of income inequality. Is that if you look at, we are a vastly unequal society in terms of income and wealth distribution. We're only getting worse in that direction. We've become a very, very polarized society, largely in part due because of the wealth and income consolidation. If you look throughout history, any time wealth and income have been as highly as consolidated as they are, you have things like this. You have groups that foment hate against minorities, and you have basically a political system that doesn't work, which is what we're seeing right now, where Congress has a lower approval rating than cockroaches. Now, these are all basic symptoms of an economic system that has gone awry. And I'll tell you, you know, the proof is in the pudding here. If you look at, was it this July or earlier or last year, maybe July or June, when the Supreme Court struck down Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act, that act right there by, you know, a branch of government, I believe the Supreme Court is, expresses political will in America, where, you know, we're seeing this all across America in Republican-controlled states, where there is an effort to undermine the vote of minorities. This is, you know, publicly stated. There is a rolling back of civil rights acts, of civil rights protections, that is a direct result of, you know, a sentiment expressed by the business community. And so, you know, we're rolling back. We're moving backwards. I mean, there's no question about that. You can look at things like, drug testing the poor. Now, in many states within Republican districts and Republican-controlled states, within the Republican political scene, it's popular to propose legislation to drug test welfare recipients, drug test unemployment. Although the courts have stopped it, it's still being done by many Republican governors. Because that is essentially the demonization of the poor. And, you know, we know that people that are racist in our society, they cannot stand the poor. They associate poor with minorities. And so this is all of a sudden become fashionable for the Republican Party, which shows you the state of that party, and it only brings the Democratic Party further in that direction. So now, you know, so I would argue that, you know, maybe on the surface of things, the way the corporate media likes to present it, we've made progress, you know, with racism. You know, we don't have laws basically separating African Americans. We don't have apartheid in this country, but you know what? We really haven't. We haven't made progress at all. You know, you can look at the lack of black ownership in the media. You can look at the lack of black ownership in general. The average black family has 10 cents of wealth for the average white family. And, you know, you could just look at all these different indications to see that clearly, you know, racism still exists in America. It's just taken a more subtle form. And that will be the case, I think, until we change it.
Oh yeah, definitely, Bob. And part of our problem is with us voting these corrupt people into office, and that's our problem. We need to stop voting for these jokers. We really do.
Yes, and one way to do that is to boycott the elections, is to not vote in the elections, because voting in the elections, as Mark E. Smith argues, is a consent to tyranny. You know, you're basically giving your consent to a corrupt system that is not intended to serve your interests or needs. It's intended to serve the interests of the business community. And so that's one way, is to reject the system. Another way is to encourage an institutional analysis of the system, because, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I don't know if you were on the air or not, but we have, there are signs of a political change occurring all across America. There are signs that people are starting to wake up and say, you know what, our current economic system is a failure for the vast majority of Americans, and something has to be done. And then once most people, you know, acknowledge that, and I would argue that the demographics are certainly trending in that direction, where, you know, individuals like myself and even younger are eventually going to become the rulers of this country. We're going to be the elected officials someday, and we tend to be very progressive, and we tend to be open to looking at different forms of you know, economics and so on. And so we may be experiencing the change, but once people start to acknowledge that capitalism is not doing anything but serving the interests of the elites, our banking system is out of control, and the next collapse is inevitable. The banking system really should be nationalized. We have resources in America that should be nationalized. We have corporations using our commons and literally paying nothing back into the society in which they use the resources of. We have, I mean, you know, in Alaska, Tom Hartman wrote about this in his book, The Crash of 2016. In Alaska, they have an oil sharing program where the oil companies that extract oil from Alaska pay the state of Alaska money, and that money gets distributed to all the citizens of Alaska. So, you know, you can get a family of four, or you know, whoever, an Alaskan resident could get $1,000, $2,000 back from the United States from the state government there. Why don't we have that for us? Why don't we have that for every single industry that these corporate parasites are siphoning? Why don't we have that for the radio industry, the broadcast industry? Why don't we have that for the oil industry on a federal basis? Why don't we have that for, you know, any number of different industries that essentially use the government and use our land to make a profit? You know, Walmart, perfect example. Walmart uses the land. They use the government to help them build new buildings. They use the government to essentially, you know, subsidize their business model. Why don't we have them, you know? But these corporations and the very wealthy are not paying their fair share, and they're passing the cost on to us, and we are paying it. You want to know why? You know, this is why we can't get unemployment benefits extended. This is why, you know, we have to pay high student loan rates. This is why, you know, we have to pay more more for government services, because there is a shortfall in the budget that's caused by these predatory corporations and the very wealthy.
You know, Bob, it would make more sense to make the rich pay a little more and then let the poor pay what they can.
Oh, exactly. Instead, You know, you would never know that by the corporate media, because I really, you know, what you got to do is just, I really recommend you watching Noam Chomsky's propaganda model on YouTube, and it explains how issues are framed in that, you know, we are a nation of many employees. All of us rely on a paycheck or a salary,
yeah,
and the taxes get taken out before we get them. And, you know, you would expect, if the media is run by we the people, if the media is run in an effort to, you know, promote the general welfare of our society, you would expect that issues would be framed from an employee standpoint. You would expect there to be nothing but labor reporting and just, you know, a business reporting in the footnote or in some, you know, obscure section in a newspaper, because again, only 1% of income earners in America, I believe, are millionaires, are business owners. Most Americans,
mm-hmm,
are not business owners, and yet the media is given to us from the lens of business owners, wealthy elite business owners, even though they make up such a small percentage of the population. And, you know, Ralph Nader talks about yardsticks. You know, what if we measured he who controls the yardsticks controls the game? What if we measure our progress not in terms of the stock market, not in terms of corporate profits, not in terms,
mm-hmm,
of, you know, how business is doing? What if we measured it in terms of how Justin is doing, or how I'm doing, or how any number of the real Americans are doing? Because if you did that, and you know, you look at things beyond the lens of business, then things start to change, and people's assumptions start to change, and what they do and what they don't tolerate begins to change, and that leads to,
mm-hmm,
you know, structural change. And you know, so that's very, very important, but it's not going to happen in our current system, because taxes are treated as, you know, an impediment to business, even though no taxes has ever stopped anybody from starting a business. Taxes are treated as, you know, some form of welfare, even though our taxes, the United States tax dollar, is a beacon of freedom, because it pays for the society in which we live in, you know. And so, you know, the tax code, it's a very, very important issue. But you know what? We're never going to be able to change a tax code unless we take control of the tax code from the very businesses and very wealthy that have benefited it from it for so long.
Oh, absolutely, Bob. I completely agree. It's like, if it was up to me, I would have the rich be paying a little more and then the poor pay whatever they could.
Well, you know what? We don't need any more billionaires in America, okay?
No.
We get sold this false bill of goods that, you know, if we cut taxes on the very wealthy and we make a business-friendly environment, right, if we basically make a suitable climate for business and the very wealthy, then somehow everybody's going to prosper. And it goes back to the propaganda model, where everything is framed through the lens of big business, where, you know, a minimum wage increase is treated as a labor cost as opposed to, you know, the general welfare of society and it being good for society, because everything is framed through the eyes of the very wealthy. But you know what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's... The wealthy have probably, you look at some billionaire, right? Look at a billionaire in society. How much more purchasing power does that billionaire have over you and me? I have no wealth, okay? I basically own nothing, and I'm sure, Justin, you don't have that much wealth.
Nope.
So theoretically, if that billionaire had, you know, 500 times the purchasing power that I have, then he would have 500 times the amount of possession. You would think that would be the case, but that's not the case, because the savings rates among billionaires are much higher, obviously, than, you know, the average income earner. So that billionaire who has $1 billion cannot possibly you know, consume all that money. He could stack it up probably to the sky. He could, you know, stack his million dollar bills, or you know, he could stack it up to the sky. That's how much money he has. And yet, you know, what Americans have to realize is that billionaire is basically starving you and I, because you and I are fighting for the money supply to survive. We're fighting to, you know, basically get money out of the money supply to survive. And that billionaire has all the money he could ever do with, has all the money his family. I mean, you could just go down the line generation after generation. You know, he has more than enough money than he knows what to do with. It's like a kindergarten class. You know, one child has all the toys, and you know, all the other classmates have to fight for one toy. It's the same thing with the nation's billionaires. Billionaires are unpatriotic. Billionaires are bad people. They're diseased people. I don't care what you say or what the corporate media tells us about the charitable giving of the billionaire. Now, someone who is a billionaire in America is damaging to our society. And that's how we start to, that's how we need to start to look at billionaires. And the way to deal with billionaires is tax these parasites out of existence. You know, France just passed a tax, I believe, over 70%. I say that's a start. If you're making $1 billion in America, you should be taxed at 90%, because you don't need that money, and that money is coming from the exploitation of all of us.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I hate to say this, Bob, but if Blog Talk Radio gets any higher, you won't be able to afford that either, unfortunately. You know?
Yeah, I'm basically living paycheck to paycheck here, and Blog Talk Radio, it's $40 a month, which is a decent, it's like, you know, a decent percentage of my weekly income, you know, and so it just, everything is rising. The cost of living is through the roof. I mean, look at things like gas, you know, look at things like food, like education. The cost of an education used to be, you know, 400-500% less than what it is now. And you know, how do you survive when wages aren't going up? And, you know, David K. Johnston was on my show on December 17th, and he rattled off some very startling statistics, where he said that only one-third of American workers are making $40,000 a year or more. Now, $40,000 a year in a state like New Jersey is not a lot of money, but you've got two-thirds of the workforce making less than $40,000 a year. So what does that do to, you know, job seekers that are seeking that money? It significantly decreases the likelihood that they're going to get that job, and in turn puts a downward pressure on wages. And, you know, there's another estimate by the folks over at the SEIU and the CBO that says that by 2017, you're going to have half of American jobs that are going to be minimum wage jobs. And so how are we going to survive when wages are, you know, getting lower and lower and lower, and yet the cost of living is getting higher and higher and higher? And what Richard Wolff points out is that, you know, Americans have turned to credit. You know, debt has replaced paychecks. You know, years ago, you paid with things with cash. Now you go into a supermarket, you put it on the credit card. And this exists with, you know, every bill that you have. You put it on the credit card because you don't have the cash to pay it out. And what happens is, you know, basically now we have a system where Americans are in debt to a large extent, myself included. And when you're in debt, you submit to employment. You submit to any type of employment you can. And so, yeah, in another, you know, 3 or 4 years, we're going to have half the jobs in America that are going to be minimum wage jobs, and that is in large part due to the massive amount of debt that is accumulated and that has affected the vast majority of Americans, while a large amount of wealth is accruing to the people at the top.
Exactly, Bob. And here shortly, whenever you're ready for my announcement.
Yes.
Bob, I'm ready whenever you are, my friend.
Yeah, just go ahead. Yeah, I was going to mention that right away.
Okay, Bob. One of my big announcements is, even though I've been sick, I've been doing some pretty big interviews, and they are going to be played on the Carson's Corner MMA show. Just a quick run of some of the people. Michelle Kesey, from Kickboxer, and Mike Cresciano, the producer of Bloodsport 2, and many others. And I want to let your audience know that when I get to feeling better, I'm going to be permanently co-hosting the MMA show on Carson's Corner.
Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Okay, good. I'm sorry. I thought the studio blanked out there. That's great news. Tell people, give people a website where they could hear these shows.
Well, actually, they can hear it on my Blog Talk Radio show, but also they can hear it on my YouTube channel, which is Frank Dukes Fan. I'm going to start putting my shows on my YouTube channel.
And real quickly, again, give us a rundown of who you interviewed.
Today I interviewed Mike Cresciano, and also I interviewed Michelle Kesey, Tom Poe from Kickboxer, but also here soon I will be interviewing composer of the music of Bloodsport and Kickboxer, Paul Herzog.
Well, that's awesome. That really is, and that's... I'm sure the fans out there will definitely appreciate that. You know, it's really, really good. And we talked about this when you hosted the MMA show, how, you know, these movies were very important, and you know, they really reflected a different genre. And I think we could learn a lot from the folks who did Bloodsport and other movies about, you know, villains and how to have the right characters to, you know, do the movie. And so that's great stuff. I'm glad to hear you're back and you're doing very good interviews. I certainly am.
Me too, Bob, and I'm excited to permanently be joining you for the MMA show, which unfortunately that would mean I am leaving the political show, but with the way you do your political shows, brother, you got this.
Oh, thank you. I mean, it's great. I mean, we're already done here. We got 3 more minutes left. I mean, that just shows you how fast this hour went. And I hope the audience out there really enjoyed this. But and as a matter of fact, we're probably going to be doing a MMA show on Tuesday. That's the next day I have off. So, you know, we'd love for you to come on the show, Justin, and call.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Depending on my health, Bob, that would be the only thing stopping me. But as far as I'm feeling today, my answer will be yes. And unfortunately, guys and girls, this is my last political show. So without further ado, I'd like to say goodbye and show some respect.
Yes, absolutely. And you can hear Justin on the MMA show. And we'll be having a guest, working on some guests for Tuesday, the MMA show. This is Bob Carson. You listen to Carson's Corner. Make sure to support the CommonsProjectNetwork.com. Visit them, the CommonsProjectNetwork.com, for more great independent progressive media. Make sure to follow this show here on Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. And you could friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. You can even look me up on plentyoffish.com. Just don't message me if you're over 5,000 pounds, okay? You know, I lost weight. I lost 30 pounds. I'm down to a 36 waist. And I just don't have any tolerance anymore for fat people, okay? I'm sorry if I seem shallow or simplistic, but you know what? I just got to be real here, folks.
Yeah.
All right, that's going to be it for this week's edition of Carson's Corner. Thanks a lot. For those who've listened, until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect. Take care, Justin.
Take care, Bob.